This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 97. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show where we focus on everything to do with fantasy books, whether it's epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, anything else you can think of in between, and some sci-fi too, as a matter of fact. We're going to bring you the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world here on the show each week. To start things off for this week, I'll begin with my own author update. I'm continuing my work on book 4 of the Huntress Clan Saga. Its title is Huntress Scout. I'm really enjoying, there's a brand new character in this series that I'm introducing, and the relationship that that character has with Quinn the Huntress is quite fun to write. If you want, you can get caught up with the first 3 books in the series so you're ready. The next one is due out sometime in May. You can check out more information about everything I'm up to by visiting my own fan group over on Facebook at Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, also over on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. I look forward to hearing from you. I respond back to people that reach out to me, so please don't hesitate to check in and see what I'm up to. On today's show, I interview my friend, author Matt Larkin. Matt's fantasy books are intense, they're gritty, they're dark, they're based on his interpretation and retelling of various ancient mythologies, beginning in the first series with Norse mythology. He strives to combine gut-wrenching action with thought-provoking ideas and culturally resonant stories. Check out his Gods of Ragnarok era series and my interview with Matt coming up right now. Matt Larkin, welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Jamie.
So we've known each other for a while. I'm trying to think. We met, was it the Smart Artist Summit?
Around 2015,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, definitely.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it sounds about right. We've known each other for a while. So it's always fun to have like an author, quote-unquote friend, come on the show, somebody I know and have been following for a while. But, of course, the readers and the people listening to this episode probably don't know you as well. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what started you writing fantasy books?
All right. I am Matt Larkin, and I write reimaginings and retellings of mythology as fantasy, dark fantasy, sort of gritty, serious stuff. It's all in the same universe, so I'm trying to reconcile all the various world mythologies together into a cohesive whole. The different series take place at different time periods, but there's a little bit of overlap so that pieces all kind of fit together. And I look at the universe as, one big puzzle where everything's meant to fit together like a tapestry. And as to your other question about how I got started, I don't even remember a time when I wasn't into fantasy. Telling stories and fantasy stories from my youngest childhood days. I got started with The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings and kind of went from there. You know, I read it first with my parents and then just latched onto it. And maybe around middle school, I got kind of obsessed with the origins of fantasy being mythology and started reading, all the original myths and doing all the research I could into the sources of fantasy.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm familiar with your books, and actually just pulled out and started reading. I think I've read at least the first book before, but I hadn't been it had been a while, so I pulled it out and started reading again. And Apples of Adun, I guess I pronounced that correctly.
Eden, Apples of Eden.
Eden, of course, duh. Okay. That makes much more sense. That's I've been pronouncing that name wrong the whole time I've been reading. You get that a lot, though. I know I do.
Sure. Yeah. I try to be as authentic as I can with the cultures that I'm pulling from, which means I'm using in the case of Norse mythologies a small smattering of Norse words and Germanic words and some of the older spellings. And so a lot of people don't know exactly how to pronounce it, and I try to handle that as best I could. Also, I've got the guy that's narrating the audiobooks is actually from Sweden, so he knows how to pronounce everything. That's been a real fun bonus working with him.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, audiobooks are a great, I think, storytelling tool. And I find, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, but I find listening to my own audiobooks, it's not hearing a story I wrote. It's just hearing a story, which is kind of fun.
I think that you know my friend and sometimes co-author Jeff Boren, and you know, he listened to the original audition that Ulf did for the audiobooks, he said, wow, this is like hearing a, you know, an old Norse skull sitting around a campfire telling a story. And that's how I knew that I had the right narrator. So, I've been really happy with it. And listening to him, it's an interesting experience for myself. I prefer to read books on a Kindle. I don't listen to a lot of audiobooks, but listening to my own audiobooks, it's like a totally different experience than having written them.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to familiarize folks with the I'm going to screw this up, but Eschaton Cycle?
Eschaton Cycle, yeah.
Oh,
that's
got it right.
The name of the universe that all these different series right. take place in.
And we're in the Gods of Ragnarok, so we're in that Norse mythology, you know, Odin and Thor and Loki and you know, people are probably very familiar with that from the Marvel novels or Marvel stories and movies. But you tell it from a completely different angle, whereas these people are just ordinary people, ordinary, you know, chieftains of tribes. And this is about how they became deities of this mythology, which is just fascinating. And just kind of an interesting twist on the tale that I have never heard before.
Oh, thank you. That idea came about from the Prose Edda, which was when Snorri Sturluson was writing the Prose Edda, Iceland had already become converted to Christianity. So he couldn't go in and just say these were gods, because that would have gotten him in trouble with the church. So he said, okay, these were descendants of Troy that became wanderers, the Trojan War, after the Trojan War, and they became wanderers, and they crossed across the world, and they were sorcerers and long-lived, and they used magic and trickery to trick the people living in Sweden into thinking they were gods. And that's the prologue to the Prose Edda, is him telling us that, and then the rest of the Prose Edda is about Odin tricking King Gylfi into thinking that he and his people are gods. And Snorri handles it really cleverly, because after the prologue, there's no further mention of it being a trick. It's just told like all the old Norse stories of them being gods. And that just gave me this idea to start it in that direction, start them as people and have them interact with this ancient kind of brutal world and have to move through this world and embrace or fight against the force of destiny.
So the Gods of Ragnarok era comprises 9 books, that's correct?
Yes. The Eschaton Cycle is divided into different eras, different time periods. One of those time period is based largely on Norse mythology, although there are some other influences in there, some Germanic myths, some Finnish. A little bit of the Song of Roland is incorporated into it. The Gods of the Ragnarok era is the main series. And then I have another series called the Runeblade Saga that intersects with it. The characters kind of pass back and forth a little bit. And then there is another book, a shorter book, about half the length of one of the other books, that is a prequel to both series. So there's 15 total books, but the main series you're talking about is 9. Yes.
And your most recent book, Queens of Mana, is that the prequel you were talking about?
No, the Heirs of Mana trilogy takes place in a prior era of the world, and it's I won't say it's completely unrelated, because there's some relation, because it is the same world and it's kind of continuing some of the same themes and that kind of thing, but it takes place many thousands of years before that. The prequel I was talking about is called Darkness Forged.
Okay. What are some of the challenges you find, you know, writing something? Obviously, there's some great advantages to writing in the same world and universe because you can connect things. You know, it's like, you know, the old connect the dots pictures. You don't realize the whole picture until you see all the dots connected. But there are challenges that go along with that, too, which is I would imagine some of them like keeping things straight and stuff like that. What have you found?
Oh yeah, keeping organized is definitely challenging. I am very much a planner. I'm very much on the planner side of the spectrum, but I am not the greatest at keeping all my ideas and notes organized. So they're kind of all over the place, and I'm continuously trying to bring them back together and get them in some kind of format that can be processed. And one thing that that sometimes means is sometimes I need to go back and reread chunks of my own books, sometimes at length, to even remember what have I revealed already? What have I not revealed? Where was it revealed? You know, and the bigger it gets now that if you're including the Heirs of Mana part of the Eschaton cycle, now I'm up to 18 books in this whole universe, and I'm working on more, so it just keeps growing bigger and bigger, and there's more and more to keep track of. So I've tried a couple of different methods. I've had gigantic Scrivener projects. I don't know if your listeners are going to be familiar with that. I assume you know what I'm talking about. And I've tried wikis, and of course, then I've just got both actually written notepads and digital notepads, and I've had stuff in Evernote and stuff in Microsoft Word, and it's all over the place. So it's sometimes hard for me to find exactly what I'm looking for. So yeah, that would be my biggest challenge, is keeping organized with all the various ideas and notes and thoughts.
It's just amazing. So are you going to dig into like Greco-Roman mythology, and maybe, you know, I mean, what are some of the other parts of the world mythological spectrum that you're going to be exploring?
Yeah, my current project is Greek mythology. That's what I'm working on this year. And later I'm going to be working on some Pan-Asian stuff. Ideally, there's a lot of things I would like to dive into, and I have a whole bunch of stuff planned out. But for the immediate future, it's going to be
Greek
mythology.
How many books do you plan? You know, do you have an idea of what your planning cycle is for that? I mean, is it going to be quite as long as the Norse mythology? I mean, everything's so rich. There's so many directions you can go in all of these things.
The Greek mythology series, I'm planning it to be 9 books long. I don't know if there will be any spinoffs the way I did with the Norse stuff. I'm trying to keep it a little bit more linear. But you know, one thing I found when writing the Norse stuff is there's, in order to keep the story moving and focused mainly on Odin and Gods of the Ragnarok era, is it's got a lot of point of view characters and a lot of stories going on, but the greatest focus is on Odin's journey. And in order to keep that focus, sometimes there were aspects of Norse mythology that I had to say, okay, maybe I'll be able to tell this as another story someday, but I can't put this in this book because it would be too much of a tangent, too much of a diversion. And, you know, epic fantasy is already so big. And I think we've all seen some series that maybe get a little bit out of control when the author doesn't rein in his ideas and keep some kind of focus. And then you've got, you know, books and books going on with something that has nothing to do with the main story. So I had to pick and choose what could be included.
It's just a lot of fun to read and kind of see the different directions. And you're right. I mean, epic fantasy, you can get lost in side quests, I guess you'd call it. And you lose track of what the central yeah. theme is, or the central trail that you're trying to follow. It's probably why I write urban fantasy, which is usually single or two points of view and pretty straightforward.
I think urban fantasy is more. So as I mentioned, I have a co-author, not that I do the fantasy with, but that I do space opera with. And it's just, it's like a palate cleanser almost. I mean, of course, space opera is also very rich and intense and all, but the amount of planning and research required is much less. So it becomes, it's freeing. Like you can just go in whatever direction you want. And I don't have to worry as much about genealogies and, you know, all these different interactions that I do, not only within a single mythology, but because I want the mythologies to play nicely with each other and interact with each other. I have to consider all mythologies when I'm working on that. So if you were to continue reading along the Gods of the Ragnarok era series, the further along you go, the more you're going to see connections to other mythologies, including the Greek stuff that I'm working on now, which takes place before any of the other stuff that I've written.
It's a lot of fun. Now you call the space opera kind of a palate cleanser. Do you find you have trouble shifting gears back? Because I know I wrote last year a dystopian sci-fi series. And when I went and tried to write an urban fantasy book right after I'd finished one of those books, I fell on my face writing wise because I was still writing angsty dystopian characters. And urban fantasy is all about kick-ass heroes who dominate and, you know, pretty much know what they need to do and when to do it. And that's not the case in a dystopian book. You know, people are stumbling along and, the world's out to get them.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I found because of our scheduling conflicts, I had written the first two books in the Heirs of Mana trilogy, and I had started the third book, and I had to stop in the middle to work with Jeff on Astral Prime. And, it was the only way we could make our schedules line up, so it wasn't ideal. And when I came back to work on Queens of Mana, I said, you know what, I have to reread the first two books that I wrote to get the voice of the characters back. So, yeah. I prefer not to jump universes too much because I have a different voice, a different style of how I would go about each one.
Oh, I would imagine so. I mean, I like the voice is a good way to put it. It's almost as if it's two different people speaking. And I know readers might not necessarily get that, but we have lots of voices in our heads, don't we?
Yeah, and with The most recent one I worked on, the Heirs of Mana series, there's four point of view characters, and they each have their own unique voice. And four is much less than the Gods of the Ragnarok era series. I don't even know how many point of view characters there were in there. That would take me a lot longer to count, but I don't know, probably upwards of 15 if you count the whole 9-book series because it changes over the books. But even four characters. So I had four characters that I was writing in Heirs of Mana, and then, maybe I had four or five in the space opera, and they each have their own personality and the way that they're meant to think, even in their own head, which is the narrative that the reader is reading. You know, it's the word choice is different. The things that they notice are different, and you want it to feel consistent. So, yeah, usually if I'm switching projects, I have to go back and reread those characters to make sure that they sound the way they're supposed to sound and feel the way they're supposed to feel.
What's it like working with a co-author? Like, I mean, Jeff's a great guy and he's a fantastic writer. So I imagine, the writing part of it isn't necessarily that difficult, but, managing the story and the characters and the planning of who writes what, what's that like?
Oh, that's a lot of fun. That's maybe the most fun of the whole process. We get on Zoom and, we start bringing up Google Documents and Google Spreadsheets and going back and forth and throwing out ideas. And, that'll go for probably a few hours, several times a week, a couple of weeks. And at the end of it, we've got basically a whole series planned out. And, then we start writing and then we each go over what the other person wrote to make sure that the voice of the story sounds consistent. The voice of both the characters and of the story sounds consistent throughout. So, yeah, the whole process was a lot of fun. We've done two series together, a total of 17 books plus actually, I don't know how many short stories, numerous short stories in two different universes. And the whole experience was a lot of fun.
I know I actually co-wrote a series with my son, and that was an experience in a lot, mostly good ways, but a challenge in some ways to kind of divvy up the process. And he's not a writer necessarily. He's a gamer and an IT professional. So, you know,
you told me about that. I think I remember hearing about that. That's your accidental series.
The same kind of thing, you know, it was kind of getting that, you know, consistent, voice throughout the stories and making sure that, you know, the readers wouldn't be jarred from book to book or even from chapter to chapter.
One thing, when Jeff and I chose to work together, we both read the other's work and decided that we both had a close enough style that wasn't going to be a big problem. And I think that's something you need. If you're going to have a co-author, you don't want it to be jarring. Like, we both use a very close, third-person limited point of view in our writing, and we both have, you know, a relatively similar style, even though we have different areas of expertise. Like, you know, he comes from a background in engineering, so, you know, if I'm writing something in there working with him, I may have just, you know, left him a note in here that says, fill in science, please, or something like that. But, you know, whereas my background is more in history and mythology and philosophy. So there were aspects that we would leave blank, but the actual writing itself, usually we had very little difficulty smoothing it over. Only characters' dialogues usually had to be changed to make characters sound
characters. I mean, in your Eschaton cycle, you're dealing with mythologies that have pretty fleshed out characters. I mean, we know sort of from reading and learning about Norse mythology what Odin and Thor and Loki are like personality wise. But that's different in a world where you're building a space opera and you have characters that don't have that rich cultural background that people can draw on. Do you find it harder to write in the space opera side of things from a character development standpoint, or do you feel more rigidly contained maybe by having to write within strictures defined by what you have to write in the Eschaton cycle?
The latter one, I think. When I was saying it was a palate cleanser, I think because it's freeing, right? There's no specific structures of the stories or characters that I have to follow. So we can build a character from the ground up. When you're dealing with a mythological figure, you have certain aspects of them that you know you want to carry over. And if you have multiple sources, and you should when they're available, they may contradict themselves. So the way a character acts or behaves is not always going to be the same in every myth that they appear in. And you have to draw this fine line, I guess. You have to draw a fine line between what is in the source material and what you need the character to be and what's going to be interesting to the reader. And also sometimes you're dealing with characters that are many times in myth, you're dealing with deeply flawed individuals. And that for me is fine. I mean, I write grimdark fantasy where people are deeply flawed people just doing the best they can, but they got some serious issues. So that's okay. But there are times when a character will, in the stories, will go and do something that is so reprehensible that I have to either decide not to include it or change it or do something to make it fit. You know, because when you're looking at myths, sometimes characters do some really awful things without sufficient justification in those myths. You know, we want our stories to be
definitely
readable.
And you know, to kind of give people an idea, like what you might be talking about there is, if you've seen the Marvel movies, you know, you need a reason to change a character's direction drastically. You need something to explain if you're going to do something that's completely out of character for what people expect. And that whole arc where Thor, you know, gets fat and, you know, overweight and, you know, is no longer the heroic Thor. you know, kind of was jarring at first. I mean, we laughed, but, you know, we kind of wanted him back, right? And I think they had to really, it was important for them to explain that, that kind of fall from grace he had. And I, you know, I can understand you having to kind of make sure you're fitting the stories, but having a reason for everything to happen.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Marvel movies, that, you know, that's, I enjoy them. I enjoy the Marvel movies. I enjoy the Marvel's Thor or whatever. But those are tales where they have taken.
Oh yeah, and I don't want to compare them to your stories at all, because you're much, I think, truer to the authentic mythology. But I like to sometimes use them because people are so familiar with those characters that they make good examples for why writers do things a certain way.
Sure. And I mean, like I said, I enjoy them, and they're a boon to me, the fact that they've kind of created a surge of interest in Norse mythology. And, you know, sometimes people want to go on and move on from there and find stuff closer to the original tales. And that sometimes brings them to me. And, you know, that's great. That's great news. But sometimes they do get jarred. I got a message from a mother wanting some work for her, some reading material for her 11-year-old son that loves mythology so much. And I had to tell her, well, you know, whatever is right for your kid is fine, but you might want to read my books before you give them to them, because they're not PG Marvel movies. You know, they're intended for adults, and they're taking the source material, which is often very violent and dark and has people doing bad things to each other. And whether or not they have good reasons, you know, it's not something that I would necessarily give to my kid. So I think that's one of the biggest differences, is sometimes people come in from the Marvel movies and they're expecting these characters to be more lighthearted and more heroic and less behaving like Vikings or you know, barbarians. And sometimes that's not what they want.
People need to understand mythology. The mythologies of the world were created to describe a harsh environment, often, especially in the Norse mythology. I mean, these people were living in an austere landscape with short growing seasons for agriculture. And so they needed to support themselves in a variety of ways. And you know, it led to a very brutal culture in many ways. And you see that throughout, you know, different mythologies to explain, you know, why volcanoes happen, or why, you know, why horrible hurricanes strike, or any of those things that, you know, where nature seems to be against you. You can explain it away with your mythology. And I think that that's important to remember, that horrible things happen in mythology for a reason.
Yeah. And I think, like, right now I'm reading all these Greek myths in their original sources. And if you look at the characters of Zeus or any of the gods, I mean, these are pretty awful, petulant people, right? They're murdering people left and right. And the male gods are almost all rapists. And, you know, and they're just doing whatever they want, whenever they want. They'll produce horrible curses on people that speak badly of them. And I think the important thing, like in Greek mythology, I think the Greeks look at their gods as, you know, somebody that they have to worship, but not necessarily somebody that they're trying to behave in that manner, right? They're not sources of people to emulate. And the thing is, even the heroes in Greek mythology, Hercules or Heracles in Greek, and many of the others, they've also done some pretty bad things. I mean, if you go through the full spectrum of the Heracles stories, he murders a lot of people, sometimes with very little reason other than he wants their stuff. Sometimes he feels bad about it, and sometimes he tries to, you know, get purification from it. But usually the times he feels bad are only the times when he murdered somebody he actually cared about. Whereas, you know, if he goes to some other land and finds out somebody else, you know, has something he needs, some cattle or whatever, he may just go and kill them and take it. And this is the greatest hero that they have. And it's just a different time period, and you can't necessarily apply modern sensibilities to it. You need to look at it through the lens of this was a harsher world.
We could talk, I think, for quite a long time, but we're nearing the end of our allotted half hour here on the show. Matt, you have a great community you're building over on Facebook, the Scalds Tribe, the Eschaton Cycle. People can join the group and participate over there. I've been kind of looking through the posts that you have there. That's a lot of fun. Also at mattlarkinbooks.com. Is there anywhere else you like to interact with people, or do you ever get out to cons or anything like that?
Not very often anymore, to be honest. No, I try to answer all my emails, and you can email me through the website, or I'm pretty active in that Facebook group. I don't get out to cons as much as I used to anymore. No, I'm afraid. I spend so much time trying to produce new material and trying to research new material.
Well, I think people will appreciate that. You certainly put out a lot of great books in a short period of time, which will keep readers happy for sure. So folks can find the links to everything you do in the show notes for this episode. I urge them to go and check out the entire Eschaton cycle of stories. There's going to be, sounds like, a lot more to come. And Matt, thanks so much for coming on the show. I'd love to have you back on sometime in the future. Maybe when you kind of get close to wrapping up the Greco-Roman cycle of things, you can talk about where you're heading next.
Sure, I'd be happy to, and it's always great to talk to you, Jamie.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the fantasy focus and fantasy and sci-fi focus community. You can find them over on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode over there and let me know what's on your mind if you're over at the website. Also on the website, on each podcast episode post, you'll find links to subscribe to the show right below the audio player at the top of the page. So go ahead and subscribe using your favorite mobile app for iOS, Android, or even subscribe by email. But you don't want to miss any of the upcoming episodes. We've got some amazing authors coming. Our next one is a great episode with author Katrin Russell. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book just by signing up for my newsletter while you're over there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe and come back here for the next podcast episode. And in the meantime, always remember to keep your eyes open out there, folks, because whether you know it or not, there's magic all around you.